You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, we are back here on Locked On Phoenix Suns, or Locked On Chris Paul. I don't know what we should call it now, but the aftermath of the Chris Paul trade is firmly upon us. It has not been finalized by the franchise, I do want to say, but go check out my instant thoughts from yesterday's episode if you have not already. If you haven't, I don't know how you found this episode, but definitely be sure to check that out. I got my thoughts out at the very least. But I wanted to bring on a guest, somebody who suffered through as much bad Suns basketball as anyone in the Valley, anyone who's covered this team, and somebody who wrote a really good piece, I think, using that perspective to break down the Chris Paul trade when it came down. We're recording this Monday night, obviously, came down a few hours ago, and that is Kellen Olson of Arizona Sports. And what we're going to do, Kellen, today is go through my six remaining questions, my six biggest remaining questions coming out of the trade. Stuff that I've seen fans talking about, stuff that's on my mind, and stuff that's going to sort of inform the way the Suns play out the next few days here as the NBA shoves an entire offseason into 1 week. But first, give us a sense of what your reaction was to coming out of an insane NFL game yesterday. Valley sports fans were treated to another little treat when the Paul trade got finished up here about midday.
Yeah, it's going to be, first of all, thank you for having me on Locked On Chris Paul. I like Locked On Chris Paul way more than Locked On Mike James or Locked On Isaiah Kanan or Locked On Tyler Ulis, those episodes that some longtime listeners might remember me recording by myself in a closet in my house because nowhere else was quiet. but man, it feels like 400 years ago now because of this year, but it really was quite a while ago. So my reaction, it's really locally, it's one of the bigger sports 24-hour stretches in quite a long time. There have been like singular moments, but those two happening together. And I don't know, just something feeling like it should happen and then happening. I tweeted the day of the trade. I was like, man, the day of Windhorst and Bontemps report. I was like, man, I'm starting to get like really worried about Suns Twitter if this actually doesn't happen, because everyone was just treating it as if it was not a lock to happen, but that it was a near certainty or like very likely that it was going to happen. It all made sense, and I completely get that, but you go a couple of days without hearing anything at all, like no reports on talks progressing or anything, and then here it is, right as the moratorium lifts, like an hour after. So I would say the feeling first was probably relief, because I wanted this to happen. I'm, like you said, I'm very excited to cover what could be a playoff team, and I'm very excited to watch Chris Paul play on a night-to-night basis. I spent quite a while on our Empire of the Suns podcast today just reinforcing how good Chris Paul is, because I've made the DeAndre Hopkins comparison a couple of times here, but like you don't really understand great, really truly great players until they play for your team every snap or every play or whatever it is, unless that guy's on national TV like a nauseating amount of time. Like we know how LeBron plays, everyone does now if you're a basketball fan, but I think Chris Paul has like become underappreciated in the past couple of years. And I think you're with me on this, is that he is an incredible basketball player and I can't wait to watch him.
Cannot wait to watch him. Cannot wait to cover him. I mean, we all, I think one thing all basketball fans did get to appreciate this year is just how impressive of a dude he is off the court in terms of putting this bubble together, leading the league social justice fight and all the rest. But we're going to get to see an amazing basketball player in addition to a guy that I think has a real chance to make a dent in the culture of this team as well. But we'll get into all of that, because I think it's all part of the package here, all part of why they were targeting him and why I think it has a chance to be really successful. But you nailed the first part, and I think it's what everybody is wondering about, which is, are the Suns a playoff team? That's question number one. What do you think?
Again, to throw it back to the conversation I had, just because that's what my brain always does when I'm about to say something again, which is not a good trait to have in this business. And I need to cut it out, but I think listeners to the podcast are aware by now. Anyway, what we basically broke down, what I broke down, is that there's the Lakers, Clippers, Warriors, and Nuggets, who are without a doubt four, like, no-doubt playoff teams. Obviously, as much of a no-doubt playoff team as they can be. Who knows if, like, the Clippers make a crazy trade coming up that, like, makes them worse, or there's a significant injury to those teams. But for now, those four teams are in. After that, you've got three teams, in my opinion, Utah, Dallas, and Portland, who, like, are seemingly playoff teams. They should firmly be in that range. And then you've got a handful of teams after that. That's where you've got New Orleans, Memphis. I think you have to include the Spurs until they officially die. And they didn't quite get there last year. They were leaning towards it, but not quite. And then there's one more team that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Oklahoma City has to be included, because I think it's a half-decent team they got still. We'll see who's left by Friday. But for now, and if they try to kind of run it back to a certain extent, or actually play with the season out with Rubio and part of it with Oubre, Steven Adams is really good. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is pretty good. Like, they might be a half-decent team. And then the team I didn't mention is Houston. They're volatile in this. They're in that first group of a contending team. If they have both those guys together, they have to be. We're talking about Harden and Westbrook, of course, but if one goes or both go, they fluctuate a lot. So with those, like, group separations in mind, I think that the Suns with Chris Paul are in that second group. I think they're among Dallas, Portland, Utah, where I think they're firmly, like, a playoff team right now. I say that with a contingency that they have to execute their offseason in the next couple of days in the way that they should. They need to add a third guard. They need to add a little more depth on the wing. And they need to reassure the front court, which it seems like with the direction they're going and not opening up cap space, that would probably mean the return of Dario Saric and maybe even Aaron Baines too. Even if that's the case, if they just add a third guard, draft Sadiq Bey or Vassell or Bain, and then they bring back Saric and Baines, like, that's a legitimately, like, nine deep team right there that's pretty good, assuming that third guard is someone you trust, like Jeff Teague, DJ Augustine, Lynx, and Galloway are names that come to mind. That's legitimately nine deep with Chris Paul and Devin Booker starting alongside Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and DeAndre Ayton. That's a really good team, and that is a for sure playoff team in my eyes. Now, maybe the offseason doesn't go as well, and I'm more hesitant, and I put them around, like, Memphis and New Orleans. But I don't know, man. It keeps coming back to this. Like, Chris Paul is amazing. Like, he might be a better basketball player right now than Devin Booker, and you're not going to hear me say that about a lot of people. But I think I can say it about Chris Paul, and everyone on this podcast for the years listening knows how much I have believed in Devin as, like, a top 15, 20, 25 player in the league. Chris Paul is just unbelievable.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, like you said, I think because of the fact that effectively for 24 or more months now, he's really only existed in the conversation outside of maybe that first round series in the bubble against Houston as a trade piece, as a guy that's part of what sucks about the way that I think people consume the NBA sometimes, is that a guy as amazing as Chris Paul is suddenly only being talked about as, where is he going and why is he paid so much and who can afford him? And it's disappointing, but hey, the Suns benefited from that. And I think if you're in the Valley or you pay attention to this team, you're going to stop only thinking of him that way, because he's going to make a huge difference on this team. I see the locks here as similar to you. I would say the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Jazz, and the Mavericks to me are the locks. And we have a big James Harden question, a big Rudy Gobert question, although I don't even think losing Gobert would knock Utah out of the playoffs necessarily. And then, yeah, you got some young teams like Memphis and New Orleans that are going to be right there, in addition to the Golden State stuff and whatever. It's going to be a slugfest. It's going to be a little easier, too, by way of this play-in tournament that'll help a couple teams out getting in there. So we're really looking at more like 10 playoff teams now. But I think I agree. I think even kind of regardless of what they do with this extra money, the exceptions that they have to use, we know that they're going to be able to find a player there. They're going to be an appealing destination, I think. So I trust that they can find someone. Obviously, who they get is going to maybe dictate how excited and how sure I am of my answer to this question. But assuming that Sarver is willing to go spend that money and they fill out the roster, I'm right there with you. I mean, I was a guy really drinking the bubble Kool-Aid. I thought this could have potentially been a playoff team even without this, assuming that they could get a decent player in free agency and keep Oubre and Rubio. I felt decent about that team even. So obviously you throw a top 20, top 25 player in here, and of course I'm going to say yes. So we're on the same page there. Question number two. Do you worry about Chris Paul's health? That, I think, is the other thing maybe on the negative side that I've seen a lot of people talking about as they digest this trade. I've seen some people give a few crazy things that giving up the 2022 pick wasn't worth it because of his health or whatever. I think the trade was phenomenal on the part of James Jones, so I don't have any quibbles there. But obviously, when we talk about how this team will look and how good they're going to be, it's going to really matter if Chris Paul can stay on the floor. Where do you fall on this one?
Well, this is the reason why if you draft Kyra Lewis 10th or whatever, it's like, okay, what if Chris Paul gets hurt? Then are you going to start this kid all of a sudden? And not like, if you're going to draft someone at 10 as a point guard and then not really sign that much of like a veteran presence, like, is it really going to be down to like campaign or Javon Carter or that rookie? Like, I think you obviously need that other guard in there. So I have to say this with the expectation that they will add a third guard. If they run back the bubble and that's it, or if they draft someone, I feel a lot differently about it. But I hope right now, I will still say that like they're the overwhelming winners of the, not the, there's not winners and losers of that trade, especially because I think both sides won. But I would look at the trade a little bit worse for sure if they didn't have like a plan to add the right type of third guard for this team, because I've been the person on their rooftop and everyone else's rooftop while they're asleep screaming that this team needs a third guard and a competent one at that, and it's one who's been proven in the NBA before. So with that in mind, that applies even more now because Ricky Rubio got hurt, but it was Ricky Rubio got hurt in a way where it affected his performance. Chris Paul gets hurt in a way where he misses like 15 games, you know, like he's just going to miss that handful of games every year. And that's like a foregone conclusion and it's accepted. But in terms of it actually like hurting this deal, you know what's more fun than a top 20 or 25 player? Brendan, two of them. They have Devin Booker. We've seen what he can do by himself with a competent team in the bubble already, and like in the parts of this season where this roster was fully together, which again was barely at all. So there's just, when you do that, that's where if you're a team at, like Oklahoma City doing this, where the drop off from your Chris Paul to the next guy is brutal. And Danilo is still a pretty good player, but it's a big drop. That's where I worry about the health. But with this, it's like Book and DeAndre should hopefully be able, I know Book will. The question is, how big of a leap does DeAndre take year three? But with that in mind, I think you have the right infrastructure in place, even if the third guard thing doesn't work out. But I still, to answer that question, it goes to another question, which is what do they do it in free agency and in the draft? And like, maybe they trade the pick. Maybe Luke Kennard deal comes back.
That's one of my questions. We'll get there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, look, it's to me, I think one thing I've been hitting on the whole week as we thought this thing was coming is part, maybe the singular, the best, the most important reason that the Oklahoma City Thunder got what they did out of Chris Paul is because of the guard rotation that they had. That wasn't just some unique, interesting thing about their team. That was the reason that Paul was able to be so good, I think, and why he was so fresh come playoff time in a way we haven't really seen him be, admittedly only in a 7-game run. You know, he wasn't deep this year like he was, say, in 2018 with the Rockets, but he looked like himself come playoff time, and that's been rare lately. So I think you're not going to get too like starter level players like Schroeder and SGA around him, but you obviously have Devin Booker, and I think, like you said, you have the space to add more. So there's no reason that the Suns can't provide a similar level of insulation, and you have like a Mikal Bridges to help him out defensively, where you don't have to have Paul chasing down a Luka Doncic or something, you know, on a nightly basis. I think all that means that they can afford him a similar level of comfort and patience with his body and all the rest, so that he is able to stay healthy. And yeah, you're going to build in some missed games into the equation, especially in this condensed season or semi-condensed season that we're about to watch. But all things considered, I'm not particularly worried about it because, look, Ricky Rubio was also a guy who you kind of had to build that into. We saw him miss. He almost had to go under these sort of like not really injury hiatuses every couple of weeks or every couple of months during the season so that he could get healthy again. And that's not much different than what I expect from Paul. So in that regard, I'm not terribly worried about it. Let's get questions three and four. touching on some of what maybe the downside might be of this trade. But before that, I want to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, which is Built Bar. Built Bar, actually Built Go. My bad. These product names are too similar. We gotta tell these guys. But the energy that you need from Built Bar is exactly the same thing that Built Go tries to do for you. If you're out and about more as the weather cools down in Arizona, maybe you're just settling into a nice long quarantine again as we get into the winter. Not to put you guys too down, but I've been definitely hiking a lot more and getting out of the house and taking the dog on longer walks even. And the best way to get that pick-me-up to keep going throughout your day after a workout or before one or in between meals is Built Go. It's an easy 1.5 ounce package. You can put it in your briefcase, golf bag, or just in your pocket throughout the day and put it down whenever you need. It's 5-hour energy without that same crash feeling afterward. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for your body. These things come in 3 delicious flavors: peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, chocolate mint, and they're made of stuff that actually, like, you know what it is. You're not just putting some foreign substance into your body and hoping that it gives you energy. It's collagen, protein, B3, B6, B12, a little bit of caffeine, 10,000% of your daily B12, actually. So if you've been down on B12, don't worry. They've got this for you. And look, collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, and hair and skin health. So the stuff makes you look better, too. It's not just about the energy. It's all around healthy. It's all around good for you. I know that I'm a little wary of just throwing down like Monsters or 5-hour energies and hoping for the best. Even coffee kind of makes me feel gross after a while. So this is the perfect product for anybody who lives an active lifestyle or just gets tired from time to time. If you want to take advantage, try them out. Go to visit or go to builtgo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Again, promo code LOCKED at checkout at builtgo.com for 20% off your first order. All right, Kellen, question number 3. Was it worth it to you to lose out on the cap space that the Suns would have had in 2020 here? Which, to clarify, I my reaction episode yesterday, I kind of assumed that they would do this thing officially later in the week to get the cap space. As you noted in your story, Kevin Pelton said that they are going to consummate this thing. Now, it hasn't happened yet, but they expect to do it sooner rather than later, meaning that the extra amount of salary that Paul makes compared to what the outgoing of Oubre and Rubio and Jerome was, they will lose that cap space. So they'll be operating over the cap, just to clarify, because I did not get that in my initial. And it's unlikely that they'll have a ton of room in 2021. We don't know what the roster will look like exactly, but the Oubre expiring would have given them some space. Paul's contract lasts a year more, so they're going to lose out there. Was all of that worth it to you, Kellen?
That it's interesting that you phrase the question that way, because this might have been the Suns' choice. I interpret it as like I don't know which one it would be. Like, if Oklahoma City like wanted to do the trade right away for whatever reason, that they have to do it that way, that could be it. It could also just be that the Suns wanted to operate as a team over the cap. But in terms of just like this version of free agency that they're about to undergo, as opposed to the one that they would have had in normal, not Chris Paul trade reality, I think it's worth it for sure. Is it a reason to devalue the trade? I don't know if that's fair to say, because it seems like from everything that our own John Gambadoro has been saying for weeks, is that like Dario is going to be back.
Yeah.
So if you have Dario Saric's exactly $10 million cap hold, you can't even in the other reality, now you only have $10 million in cap space, even if you get rid of everyone. So now you still can't go get those huge names that are probably going to cost like $12 to $15 million a year. One of those names you could have spent like almost all your cap space on, a la Trevor Ariza 2 years ago, and go get a big name. But yeah
Brandon, to get real thing, space, right? They were going to have to pretty much get rid of everyone. So if they wanted Saric, it's kind of moot. You're right.
I don't, if that's like an argument you're saying, I that's kind of bogus to me. I don't get it.
No, I don't necessarily think it's something that I've seen, but I don't know if people are piecing it together that way necessarily. I mean, even Pelton in his write-up basically kind of said that he did seem to ding them a little bit, you know, by doing it that way. At least in his initial write-up too, he had assumed that it would go down later. so that they could keep the space. Now, you know, all things considered, like you were just talking about, that amount of space that they would have if they kept Šarić but nobody else is about the same as the mid-level exception. So, you know, in that regard, if you're willing to spend that mid-level exception, it almost is equivalent. So I don't hate it, but I do think that fans seemed to be maybe worried about that, or, you know, let down that they're not going to be able to get the Jeremy Grants and Danilo Gallinari's of the world that they've been dreaming about all summer. But at the same time, what about 2021? Does that, we don't really know a ton, but it does kind of change the calculus a little bit where unless things change drastically, they're probably going to be looking at trades as the number one way to upgrade the roster. And the other thing too to mention here, which I didn't include in my recap immediately, is, which again Pelton noted, is they're going to be kind of hamstrung by the Stepien rule here now too, because they traded their 2022 pick, meaning they can't trade back-to-back picks outside of the draft night. So they can't trade this 2021 pick. I think it's going to be a good class, and maybe they just draft a player, but if they do want to trade it, they won't be able to do that until draft night of next year, which also kind of changes the way we're thinking about how this roster could get better.
Right, man. Yeah, you nailed it. The way that I wrote it, and I kind of, it's one of those things where you write something and you realize you're making like 5 points at once in a sentence, and you haven't articulated all five of those points, so you just hope people maybe kind of pick up on it. I wrote that, like, this is, you can make Giannis dream scenarios and all this kind of stuff, but this is by far the most likely chance that James Jones had at improving the roster to this level within the next 2 years. Like, from the beginning of Chris Paul's contract that's left to the end of it in 2 years, from now until that contract runs up, I don't think they would have been presented an opportunity to make the team this good besides this one. I don't think it would have came up. So that's kind of the outlook I have. And to bring up something that we were just kind of talking about, the Suns operating as a team over the cap, that means their $9.3 million full mid-level exception, that's pretty much their main tool in free agency. The problem with that, Brendan, is that you're competing with teams like the Warriors and all these other teams who I believe are non-tax. I'm going to have to look up all the non-tax teams before free agency starts, but that's non-taxpayer full mid-level. So all
over the cap, under the tax.
Yeah, and that's still a lot of really great teams. So even if I'm not exactly nailing tax-paying teams there, you're still competing with contenders for these guys that you're going to be going after. So if they think like they can go get Christian Wood for the mid-level, like, I just don't think that's happening. I think he would much rather take that from just a better team. And I know we have to start talking about the Suns differently. It's a really good situation that they're in right now. They probably a new arena. They just got Chris Paul. They have Devin Booker.
Trade just got official, by the way.
And James Jones. Oh, they did it?
Trade was made official today, or just now, yes. Just because we, you know, for the record, because we started the show saying it had not been, but it is now. Quotes from Monty, quotes from James, all happy times for everybody.
Indeed. I mean, they're going to be competing in that same landscape for 2021 free agency, right? Because everyone's going to make money for Giannis, and now you're trying to sign teams again. I don't think it's just a very smart way to go about it in the same way.
No, I think the 2021 thing to me is exactly right. Like, the way I'm looking about this, and it's something I'm writing about that I think is going to go up tomorrow for somewhere that I write, I don't know, is that, look, like, this is the first domino. Yeah, you're right. Like, we have to start thinking about this team differently, but we can't put the wagon in front of the horse here. Like, this is only these things, these options, these possibilities, the mindset of acquiring players to upgrade the roster so dramatically or be the final piece toward, like, championship contention, all that stuff is only happening because of the Chris Paul trade. So you can't separate the conversation. They are linked. You can't imagine a world where the Suns would be players in free agency or be attractive to a superstar in a trade unless they get Chris Paul, or it's just way harder to imagine it. It includes, like, incredible improvement from guys like Bridges and Ayton and whoever get they draft at 10 over the next couple of seasons. This only is possible because of that. So that's sort of where I come down, is it's like, yeah, you're sacrificing something because you got a great player, and you got a great player who happens to make a ton of money, who is only available probably because he makes a ton of money. So you can start to separate all those things and get mad at them individually or disappointed about them individually, but it all happens together. And so I think when you think about it that way, and you look at where the Suns options heading into this and where they can look now, I think they did it in a way that makes perfect sense to me. And it's going to be a matter of, okay, we did this, check, now let's see what we can do next. I think the losing out on the cap space this year is a little bit disappointing, but I think you're right that they might have preferred it that way anyway. And I think there's something to be said for Robert Sarver operating as an over-the-cap team and using these exceptions. It'll be a more expensive roster. He hasn't done that in years and years. So the fact that that's something on the table too is admirable. I mean, this was a team that only last summer was like finally getting lauded for using its mid-level exception for under-the-cap teams to sign Frank Kaminsky, to overpay Frank Kaminsky. That was like, you know, congratulations to the Suns for taking advantage of all the salary mechanisms that they can. So look, this is going to be not the end, but the beginning of something. And so I think it's not too bad to you're going to have to sacrifice stuff. I had one more question in this segment, but I think it'll be a little bit more extensive to talk about. So let's take a quick break. And then another kind of negative part of this potentially. All right, last couple of questions here. The first one being something that I'll give credit to Chris Ryan over at The Ringer in their instant reaction. Somehow nobody put out, I guess I'll take credit, but we gotta get some instant podcast reactions going. And when I'm at work, I would love something to listen to. So that's just a little piece of advice for anybody listening. But here it is from Chris Ryan. What's the potential here that Chris Paul's leadership style, Kellen, is potentially grading for this roster? Because I do, as much as we give Monty Williams credit, James Jones credit, Devin Booker, the organization overall credit for turning this culture around, it really has only been like an 18-month process. So it's like a pretty unsteady Jenga tower, I feel like, at this point, and you're making a pretty sizable move. Chris Paul's a guy who I think is very good for culture in his own way, but is a different type of guy than Ricky Rubio or Kelly Oubre even.
That is the biggest risk in this trade. I don't think people will give Kelly enough credit, which people think is crazy, because it's kind of the inverse right now, where some people don't like this trade because Kelly's in it. So everyone's talking about that part of the conversation, but I don't think the conversation that's getting enough hit is that, like, they're gonna miss this guy a lot. They're not only going to miss his locker room presence, but the fact that he's a really good player. They're going to have losses this week, Brendan, where I'm going to be saying, like, they missed Kelly in this game. He was a huge part of their team. And Ricky was too. And it's certainly, like everything you said, there are vibes on this team where, like, Ricky and Kelly, it was an easygoing group for sure. And there wasn't a personality like Chris's on the team. And now it's there. So there is always a chance when you acquire a personality like that, if you're any team, because remember the situation with the Clippers didn't really end that well. The situation with the Rockets really didn't end that well. This one was more of like a mutual agreement. OKC was looking to rebuild. It's a better situation for Chris Paul anyway. It makes sense. And the year in OKC went terrific, and there was no signs of anything going wrong there. And he took them to the playoffs and they nearly like made a run at it. Right. Yep. But there's obviously a chance with a young group that is just getting on its feet and establishing things with a young general manager and head coach. Like, that's 1 year of experience for each of those guys in that permanent role so far. So it's like a relatively fresh thing that's just being established that he comes into. With that being said, there is a reason to be concerned, and the reason I'm saying all that, I just want to go back to, Monty has worked with Chris Paul before. He has coached him before in New Orleans. Jeff Bauer drafted Chris Paul, and James has a ton of experience working with him in the league through the Players Association, and then just their time as two longtime veterans in the league that run in similar circles. So I have no doubt in my mind that Monty, Jeff Bauer, and James are fully aware of like what the delicate balance is there that they're playing with and the personality that they have in there. And like the obvious take here is that like this is exactly what the Suns need anyway. They need someone to kind of kick their ass every now and then and be that veteran influence. Of course, DeAndre Ayton is like the first name to bring up here, but it applies to a lot of different places too. And I think that there's a chance and there is risk here, and it goes beyond just missing Kelly and Ricky and what they did on the court. It goes into that as well and the locker room vibes that they gave. But if you bring up like Devin at all with this, like I'm talking to just anyone listening, like you're crazy. He grew up on Chris Paul and he just wants to win and he knows how great Chris Paul is.
He'd so play with anybody if it meant a playoff trip, I think.
Yeah, that it could be like his worst enemy, like his arch rival. But if it was someone that is going to help him win, he would play with him. And that's certainly not how he feels about Chris Paul, who is someone who was drafted, I believe, when he was 8 years old. So you can imagine like from ages 9 to 16, like when he was like in his formative years watching basketball, he was watching a lot of Chris Paul, like we were in New Orleans and then seeing him in LA. So I don't think that part's going to be a problem at all. Obviously DeAndre is someone to bring up, but look, if the development path for DeAndre Ayton hits a snag because of Chris Paul and Monty Williams, then I don't think you can blame Chris Paul and Monty Williams for that.
No, you can't, because look, I mean, as much as you can point to examples of friction, I think where that tended to happen, at least from the outside, is with other stars. And I don't expect that to happen with Booker. With young players, it seems like Paul's had a pretty positive example almost every single stop he's ever made. I mean, DeAndre Jordan, Steven Adams, literally the list is too long. Like Blake Griffin, these are guys who went from young to really good just by playing with Chris Paul. I'm not saying it's that easy. Those guys are you know, star-level players who are going to develop in their own right as well, just like Ayton and Bridges and Johnson and whoever they pick at 10 will be expected to do. But I don't think there's really an argument to be made that we really don't have any evidence, at least, that Chris Paul is like a bad influence or bad guy to have around young players in and of himself. And I just don't think that that's really ever bared out. So I'm not worried about that one either. Last question for you, Kellen. It's a two-parter, really, but who do you think makes sense at 10? What kind of guy do you like now that we know Chris Paul's a starting point guard here? And you mentioned some of the names, but who do you like in that mid-level exception slot with that same kind of roster construction in mind?
Ooh, man, it's such a specific role that they're looking for. And again, like I guess the debate is, the actual debate is like, should you, for that 9.3, and I think we should just mention this before we go, that we are speaking under the assumption that they are going to do everything in their power to make this team as good as possible next year.
Yeah, you don't have to use the exception. You don't have to.
The exceptions are just tools for you to use to make the team better. The ownership and front office do not have to use them. They can if they want to. I sure hope they want to, because they do need to fill a couple of important spots on this team, and that is going to be their number one resource in terms of doing it, is that exception specifically.
Yeah, just for the listeners, what we mean here is you could fill those slots with minimum players if you choose to. Those are only, you know, that's only a salary thing you can do if you want to help teams out if they do end up over the cap and they don't have organic cap space, but they don't have to. You don't have to use those.
They could frame their big free agency signings as Aaron Baines and Dario Saric, bring back Campaign and Javon Carter as well, and then just draft a wing at number 10 and then say they're done. Like, that is entirely something they can do. And look, even in that situation, Brendan, they're still going $10 million over the cap as it is. Or 15
in a pandemic, in a recession.
Exactly. So we shall see. And if you're looking for a G League team right now for the Phoenix Suns, you're not feeling great about that proposal. And it's something that everyone just needs to keep in mind. With that being said, I lean towards third guard more, even with Chris Paul. And I think even with Chris Paul, it should be framed as like you need it more now than you did with Rubio, because you almost have this guarantee that this guy's going to miss a dozen games or whatever. So you need someone who's capable of filling that starting role. I love DJ Augustine. Luckily for us, he has a connection with Jet Bauer that David Nash has pointed out. So maybe that makes him more likely to sign or whatever. I love the theory that Jet Bauer is like the closet, like he's really the GM this whole time. And like, they're like, certainly cases to be made, as David has pointed out. I think that's really funny stuff. Power forward, I don't know, Brendan. It's a weird drop-off after the big names that we were talking about for a couple of weeks, right? Like, it, Christian Wood is maybe the one guy of the names we talk about you could convince me could go for 9.3. But after that, I mean, Gambo's been bringing up Bobby Portis. Like, I will – no, thank – yeah, yeah. That's the sound to make for Bobby Portis.
Keep Kaminsky, honestly.
oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. Don't even – that's not even close for me. Yeah, that's part of it, too. Like, you can just bring back Kaminsky, Dario, and then that's your front court. That could certainly be something they do. But, yeah, I go to trade. I think trading the number 10 pick is hopefully what you can do here. I think the Luke Kennard deal makes a ton of sense. If his medicals check out, like, at all, I just think he makes so much sense. I know the defense isn't great, but, man, he can do almost everything you would want out of third guard, and he's truly one of the elite shooters in the league. That sounds like I'm wrong and I looked at the wrong numbers or whatever, but if you look, I think it's over the past 2-3 seasons, he's been like a 40% guy on decent volume. And those just don't really exist that much in this league. So you can put him out there as a floor spacer with these guys if you want the ball out of his hands a little bit more and just to space it. Or he can run some stuff. He really improved in Detroit. I really liked that trade at the time. And I wouldn't mind it on draft night either, even if it's a best-case scenario and Devin Vassell's there. Or I hate to say this out loud, but even if, like, Tyrese Halliburton is there and they traded it anyway. Kennard makes a lot of sense. Have you thought of any other names that make sense for number 10? There's cap things to figure out, of course, but
I honestly haven't thought about trades with 10 much at all outside, you know, keeping in mind the Paul trade. I had been thinking about trades with 10 that sort of got the Suns like a pseudo starter like Spencer Dinwiddie or like a Seth Curry I've talked about on the show or something like that. But no, I haven't really thought about guy. I was on board with the Kennard trade at the time, and I think it makes even more sense on a good team. So if that's what the Suns are going to become, I think they will be. Kennard makes even more sense than he did in February when they were like headed toward the 11 seed or whatever. So yeah, that's a good one. I would say if Devin Vassell is still available at 10, I probably think he's more valuable than any of the names you've talked about in a trade. But I think the big thing that I'm sort of thinking about right now that I think has been a through line of the show so far, and we can wrap it up here, is the calculus changes. The way that we've been thinking about this franchise and the types of moves they're going to make and the types of players they're going to prefer and all, it all is different now. And I think you're going to have not only a different sort of impetus to win with Chris Paul, but you're also going to have a very loud voice in the room in Chris Paul, who we shouldn't forget played a big part in this trade happening. This was something that Sam Presti allowed him to go and seek out on his own. I don't think those connections with the Suns front office and coaching staff are coincidental here. And I think he's a guy who isn't going to be, you know, manning the controls, but he's going to have specific types of guys that he wants, and he's going to have specific relationships that he can take advantage of and all of that stuff. So I think that's going to be something we just don't know right now. And probably plays a big part in where they go here. So, yeah, I would say Vassell I really like, but a trade may be more likely.
I realized we weren't going to hit on this. This is the seventh question. Do you have an Abdel Nader take, Nader take?
I think he can play. He carved up the Suns in that one home game in like January, and I haven't forgotten about it.
From a far perspective, and I'm saying this as a casual Abdel Nader person who was like not watching him at all when like I was watching Oklahoma City games, so like I just wasn't paying attention to him at all. He seems kind of okay.
He's a wing who can be on the floor in an NBA court. Like, that's fine. Keep him.
Team option, $1.5 million. It's the Diallo deal, basically. It's super cheap. And at the wing where they would want to add something, if you guys like want to know the stats, I mean, he only played 16 minutes a game last year, but he shot 37.5% from three on two attempts a game, 47% from the floor, two rebounds a game and an assist. And
you'd rather have him than Okobo or Diallo or any of these bottom of the roster guys, even Kaminsky. Like, I'd, you know, maybe not. Kaminsky's probably like more talented overall, but
he's hopefully the fifth forward slash wing on the team. So you have the top two guys, you have the draft pick, which I'm going to just assume. Is going to be a wing, and then you make another kind of veteran signing somewhere that's like slightly better than him, and then he's the fifth and final guy. But if he's the fourth guy, like that's okay too. That's not bad. He seems fine. I got to go back and watch more because, again, I'm watching Shea and Chris Paul and Danilo and especially my boy Steven Adams. Like, I'm not paying attention to the guy. I'm just being 100%
transparent. Yeah, I mean, look, we could end up in a situation where this guy's flipped tomorrow or Wednesday.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, so, like, Frank could get flipped. Like, there's still so much that can happen.
It's going to be an insane week, but we did want to kind of take a minute to digest the Paul trade, which, again, is now final. And debrief before we jump back into it between now and the end of the week and training camp. NBA training camps are in 16 days, and I do not understand how that's possible. But Chris Paul is a Phoenix Sun. Kellen, thank you for joining us to talk through it, and I'm sure there will be more to digest throughout the week, guys. So I hope you keep it tuned in right here on Locked On Phoenix Suns. Give us a follow at Locked On PHX Suns on Twitter. And check those feeds all week. I will be here if anything breaks. I will be here if anything doesn't break. And this is the roster. You will hear from me either way. Thanks for listening, as always, and we will be back tomorrow.